I mentioned it's the 21st of November, which means tomorrow is a very, very big day, especially for one member of the morning show, because tomorrow is the 56th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy that occurred in Dallas, November 22nd, 1963. Nobody knows the details, not so much on the presidential side of things, but on the assassin side of things, as
right,
Gordon Keith or bombed.
What drop was that?
Larry Julius or bombs.
That's too confusing.
And so in this segment, in advance of Gordo's High Holy Day, I thought that we would talk about a couple of articles, actually. One in particular, written by the great Bud Kennedy of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And he's been tweeting links to these all week long, and I've been enjoying all of his work. And a couple of stories that I had no idea about. Now, I just tweeted a picture, and Bud's Twitter handle, if you want to go and see everything that he's been tweeting this week. But the story about Lee Harvey Oswald's pallbearers, and
hey guys,
you can see in that picture, one of them looks awfully familiar.
They are members of the press, but there's one fake face that's in there.
So I never really knew this story, but there were seven pallbearers, and they were all members of the press.
Yes.
And very few reporters ever talked about that. But Mike Cochran, a few years ago from the Associated Press, retold the tale. And as Bud writes, Cochran told them that, of course, Lee Harvey's popularity that day was at an all-time low.
Yeah, so his numbers were bad that day.
Bad that day. So it was really hard to find pallbearers. So Cochran said that somebody came around and started asking the reporters, and everybody's first response was, hell no, no way. But he said that a reporter from UPI said, okay, I'll do it. And so Cochran said, okay, I'll do it too. And there were seven of them. Two of them remain unidentified to this day.
Really?
Yes, and there is
two guys out there didn't own up to it.
Two didn't own up to it, and there is that picture, that famous picture, and you can identify most of them in the picture, including our very own Gordon Keith, who is not only carrying the coffin, but you're mugging for the camera.
Yeah, looking right at it.
That's just wrong.
So I guess you guys knew this story.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that before.
Well,
I
knew Gordon knew the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, but he didn't have any friends. And there was only Robert, his brother. There was another brother, that a half brother that he didn't speak with, or that they had a falling out with. John Pick, I think his name was. But yeah, they didn't have enough people for pallbearers, so they had to carry the casket to its final resting place.
It would be weird.
Have you ever talked to any of those guys?
No, I haven't. And you know, I did. Robert is still with us, or did he just pass away?
Last I heard, he was still with us.
I think he's still with us in Wichita Falls. Robert Oswald. And I have never reached out.
Him?
No, I've never reached out to Marina or Robert Oswald to do a piece on them. And I think I kind of should, shouldn't I?
Yes.
At least attempt it.
Yes.
Yeah, but
to
do something
finally
with
get
it.
Their story out here.
Now, don't tell them up front that you own Lee Harvey's bathtub. I think that would weird them out and hurt your chances.
Robert no longer with us,
yeah,
so you better
just passed
cross
away.
That one off your list.
Don't tell Marina that you own Lee Harvey's bathtub.
Didn't Robert pass away this year? Last year?
Not at the age of 83. Yeah. It was this year.
I'm really surprised that you haven't tried to reach out to Marina.
Oh, December 2017. Sorry.
So, yeah, not
a couple years.
Basically, a couple years ago. Yeah. No, I've always left her in peace. That was.
Well, that's probably good. You
was
don't need
last request.
Unless you're doing it for like an article or an interview here on The Ticket, that's probably good.
Yeah, I wouldn't reach out for...
Just to get some notes. So what was it like? Be married to the man.
The man. Huh.
The man.
Married to the man.
Yeah, I would know. I would want to do a piece with her or an interview here that would air. Do you think that that would score high ratings here on the ticket? If we,
oh my God, yes,
yeah,
got Marina in studio.
Are you kidding
set
me?
Set her up with some free ticket T-shirts and stuff like that. You know, get her some swag. Give her a tour of the station.
Maybe some Stars tickets.
Yeah.
My other question was, if you had been there that day reporting and they were looking for pallbearers, you would have jumped in, right?
Yeah, I would have knocked over Robert Ainsworth and Bud Kennedy and whoever else.
To get a spot. In, to get the front.
I want
to
be the only one. I want to be the only pallbearer.
I've been working out. I've been working out. I can do it.
I've been working out for this moment. Oh.
The other really interesting story that Bud did this week, the forgotten story about how TCU discussed but declined to give JFK an honorary degree in 1963.
Yeah, instead they gave it to Oswald.
No.
Which I thought that was a horrible decision.
But had they done that, the ceremony would have shortened his Dallas motorcade and pushed it past Oswald's lunch hour.
See there?
He would have found a way.
He would think so?
He would have taken off early for lunch.
Yeah, because I think Oswald would have done it no matter when during that work day. Oswald basically felt like this was going to be a suicide mission.
Or somebody else did it, and they set him up, and he was just a patsy.
Just a patsy. That's my
love. Yeah, would the delayed motorcade have thrown everybody off? The shooters on the grassy knoll, right, the other shooters, no, all the other shooters would have been thrown off, right?
There were no other lone gunmen.
Storm drain shooter.
There was no storm drain shooter.
It was a turkey shoot.
Isn't that what?
Who killed Oswald?
Joe Pesci
like
said.
Like an enigma.
Whoa.
It's a... What?
This shows how far we've come, I think, in the article. He writes, when some trustees at TCU objected because of the president's Roman Catholic faith, that left an hour to fill with a fateful Dallas lunchtime motorcade. And isn't that
okay,
weird?
That's a little disingenuous on Bud's part.
What?
Well, I guess we're going to have to do a motorcade then, because we're not giving him the degree. I think they would have fit in a motorcade anyway.
Yeah, but it could have been thrown off schedule. It could have been shortened.
Yes, and Oswald would have adjusted.
What if they had done a slightly different route because the motorcade had to be shortened?
That's possible.
And he's just sitting up there with his peanut butter and jelly sandwich and his Man Liquor Carcano 850.
It was a cheese sandwich with an apple.
Wow.
Stop knowing that.
It's his last meal.
And he bought a Coke from the Coke machine on the second floor.
Stop.
See, he wasn't even up there. That. He was down there buying a Coke.
No, he was not down there buying a Coke during the shooting.
Did I get the rifle right?
What did you say?
The Man Liquor Carcano 850?
It was just a Carcano 6.5 millimeter.
Dual action?
No, you're adding that from your own Daisy
BBs
BB gun.
And pellets. Oh, my God, I know too much.
Man.
Oh, my God.
You know too much about your own gun?
But isn't that funny, and we've come a long way, I think. I know this still exists.
Oh, that was a big deal, Kennedy being Catholic.
Yes,
a lot of people could not get over that in this country.
And that's like not a thing today, is it?
What is he going to answer?
It may still be. I'm sure every religion is looked down upon by people of other religions, but...
Not like it was.
We can't have a president that answers to the Pope.
Yeah, according to several in the article, they said, well, you know, why did TCU decide not to do that? And I said, well, he's Catholic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We're Christian, so we can't possibly honor a Catholic.
Right. Meanwhile, do you think
weird
Kennedy was acting really, really Catholic during his off hours?
Well,
wasn't answering to the Pope all the time, was it?
No. You mean they should have honored him because of that?
Yes. Because he had proven that he wasn't beholden to the Pope all the time. They should have given him an honorary degree because of the Marilyn Monroe stuff.
So what do you have planned for tomorrow? I know tomorrow's like
to remember our president.
Your day. It's your Christmas.
I plan to remember our president and what a horrible instant that was in American history.
Maybe plan to honor him while taking a bubble bath in the tub of his assassin?
I've never taken a bubble bath in that thing.
Hey,
matter of fact, I'm thinking about throwing it out.
Whatever. My friend from the Texas Theater says the invite still stands for you to introduce JFK tomorrow night. The movie.
I was going to say.
JFK, the movie. And they are playing those movies.
JFK is not appearing.
They are playing the movies that were on that day that they captured Oswald in the Texas theater.
That's right.
War is Hell.
Audie Murphy,
and
yes.
Whatever the other one was.
Who gets to sit in the seat of power?
Which seat is that?
I think they have it roped off.
Hold on. This is good. Which seat is that?
I actually cannot remember, but I think it's about... It's about, it's either five rows from the back, three seats in, or it's three rows from the back, five seats in.
Yeah. I've seen you rocking back and forth saying that before. Mm-hmm. Five rows from the back, three seats in, five rows from the back, three seats in.
Stop being able to narrow it down that much.
I'll figure out which one it is.
One day last week, I was riding down through Oak Cliff. And in like 3 minutes, I saw Beckley, Ellsworth,
mm-hmm.
Neely,
yep.
Patton,
mm-hmm.
all the streets that you quote.
That I quote, you mean that are part of the historical record, part of the Warren
Both.
Commission.
Both.
All the street, but I don't have the street numbers committed to memory like you do. When you get on your 704 Ellsworth, 1818 Neely,
no.
1434 Beckley, oh my God.
It's 214 Neely.
Man. And what else?
It's so beautiful. Man, I can't even remember the Ellsbeth one now. Is it 804? 802?
Oh my God.
I don't know. I can't remember that.
And it's 10th and Patton? Or 8th and Patton?
It's 10th and Patton.
10th and Patton.
That's where Tippett was shot and killed.
I saw the historical marker there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they did? Yeah. Yeah, and doesn't the high school basically come right up to that intersection now?
Yeah.
The high school grounds?
Yep.
And that was all residential at the time, but that high school has kind of expanded and taken over that whole area. Matter of fact, you can't go through, I don't think, the same route that Oswald walked.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I was thinking that one of those streets doesn't go through anymore because it's taken up by that school campus.
Well, I did my own Gordon Keith Trail of Tears last week.
You guys want to do a Trail of Tears tomorrow?
Yeah, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get back to you.
War is hell.
Is there a McKinney tie-in? That's where we are tomorrow.
Oh, we are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think he ever made it up to McKinney, did he?
I think so.
I mean, you would know.
I want to say Oswald went to his boarding house at 1026 North Beckley and then walked up to McKinney and then back down to 10th and Patton.
Walked up to McKinney.
All right, tomorrow's a big day. Tune in for Gordo all LHO all the time on November 22nd.
It's JFK's day, sir.
It's five.
Since tomorrow is the anniversary of Kennedy's assassination here in Dallas, I think we would talk a little bit about it here. We spoke about Bud Kennedy's columns. From the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Bud Kennedy has written a couple of great columns about the history of Oswald and the Kennedy assassination here in town, and he talks about how TCU refused to give Kennedy an honorary degree, and because of he was Catholic, and that was a big deal back then to people. People were very worried about our first Catholic president. And if they had given him that honor, Kennedy would have been tied up in Fort Worth a little bit longer, and therefore would not have been here in Dallas during lunchtime for this motorcade. And Bud's point was that with Oswald not, if Kennedy had come by in a motorcade later, it would have been after the lunch hour, in which the sixth floor would have had more workers inside of it. So Oswald wouldn't have been afforded the solitude that he had at the time to construct his sniper's perch and get behind the boxes and fire. Which, that makes some sense. There would be more workers that were on the sixth floor at the time, and maybe that would have discouraged Oswald because he didn't feel like he had enough privacy in order to do what he did. I think that Oswald most likely built his perch and had been working on it all morning and would have still tried to attempt it, even if there were other workers that were there on that floor.
They couldn't have stopped him.
Because I think Oswald was determined to do this, and he felt it was going to be a suicide mission. I think he was actually surprised that he was able to get away from the Texas School Book Depository to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
He really had no escape plan. There's all these conspiracy theories about how, oh, he was going to meet his co-conspirators, and some people horribly because what's most important is to preserve the fact that there was a conspiracy, have roped J.D. Tippit into this whole business and said that Tippit was also a co-conspirator.
Wow.
Which I just feel so horrible for Tippit's family.
Yeah.
That suffered the death of their dad and their husband. And then conspiracy theorists, they just plow right over his memory by including him in the conspiracy theory. There were also people who said that Oswald was going to the Texas Theater on purpose to meet a co-conspirator. But when you really look at his movements after the shooting of President Kennedy,
pretty random.
It was random. It was chicken with its head cut off. He basically walks out of the theater. He was the only employee of the Texas School Book Depository that didn't stick around for the roll call that happened after the shooting. He was the one who was missing. He walked several blocks away and went to the Greyhound bus station. You guys, we've been there before.
Yep. Same one that's still there.
Still there. Still there. And he gets into a cab, starts to get into a cab with, I think that guy's name was Whaley. And, no, actually, I think he takes a bus first. I think that's what happened. He tried to take a bus, and it gets stuck in traffic, of course, since mayhem is going on downtown. Mm-hmm. And it's going nowhere. And he even got his little transfer ticket punched. They found that on his person later. And the bus driver recognized him and said, yeah, that's the guy who got on the bus. But the bus didn't go anywhere, so he gets let off of that. And then he goes over to the Greyhound station, to the cab stand. And he lets one cab go. He actually gives one woman who was there waiting for a cab, too. I think he lets her go first and take the cab. Then he gets in one with the cab driver, last name of Whaley. And it was the first time in Oswald's life that he took a cab. He was notoriously, he was very, very poor, mm-hmm. Oswald was. And he was very cheap, too. He didn't like to spend money. And he takes this cab ride. For the first time in his life, he decides, I'm going to splurge for a cab ride. And he says that he left work because he figured, oh, well, since the assassination, I figured there wasn't going to be any more work that day, so I was just going to head home and chill a little bit.
William Whaley was the cab driver.
William Whaley, there you go.
He was right.
I had the right last name.
Well.
And so Oswald takes the cab, but he doesn't take it straight to his rooming house, which is at 1026 North Beckley.
Stop knowing that.
He takes it down a ways to, I don't know, like the 700 block of Beckley. I may be wrong on
thinking
this.
Thinking that authorities may be at his house?
Yeah, he has the cab driver drive past his place, so he can obviously see if anybody's staking that place out. So he drives past it, and then the cab driver drops him off, and then he walks back to his rooming house. And once he gets back to his rooming house, he gets, I believe, a jacket and his pistol. And then he walks down to, eventually, 10th and Patton, where he's walking along the sidewalk there, and J.D. Tippit responds and sees this guy walking and questions him through the window. You know, they used to have those little vent windows. I don't know whether they were talking to through the passenger side vent window or the actual passenger side window was rolled down, but they were talking. Oswald had come up to the passenger side of the car. And he talks for a little while with J.D. Tippit, according to, I think, 7, 8, or 9 witnesses that were around there on their front porch or walking in the neighborhood. See these two guys talking, the guy talking to the officer through the window. And then Tippit hears something or decides to question Oswald further. Tippit gets out of his car, starts to walk around to the front of his car. Oswald walks around to the front passenger side, comes across and shoots Tippit. I want to say five or six times. God, I can't remember. Wow. And Tippit is shot and killed right there at 10th and Patton.
Can I ask you something about that? At that point, we're an hour removed from the shooting.
Yeah, it was
from the assassination. Are all cops on such high alert that they are just questioning anybody and everybody? Or did they have a description of Oswald?
There was a description that went out.
Once they did roll call?
It was a pretty generic description of a white guy, like, you know, 5'6 to 5'8.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they had the description of him being 30 years of age was the description that went out. It was Oswald, I think, was 23. He was really young.
And this wasn't based on a witness seeing him running from the school book depository, right?
No, I don't think so. And I can't remember whether the description was based on the guy who was missing from the school book depository, which was Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the details there. I'd have to go back and refreshen my memory. But he kills Tippett. He starts walking away, cuts across these people's lawns who are right on their front porch, sees this thing. He's walking across their lawn, emptying his pistol, his revolver. He actually was carrying a revolver. And emptying that, and he walks down to Jefferson, cuts across a car parking lot, a car dealership parking lot, I think it was, and takes his jacket off and stashes it up under the backside of some car to change his appearance somewhat. And that jacket was later identified by Marina that had the same marking that she knew that was in it. It was traced to Oswald. And he walks down Jefferson. Is it Jefferson or Davis? Or is it Jefferson Davis? It's Jefferson, right? The theater's on Jefferson.
Yeah.
And the reason he attracted suspicion then was, you may remember those stores there. They had those alcoves. So you have like these display windows up front, and then the display windows cut into a doorway that's about 10 feet within, you know. So they have this alcove where the front door is, where Oswald stepped in there as sirens passed by, because there are all these screaming sirens that were going by because there was a shooting of an officer, and one of those citizens who witnessed the shooting of J.D. Tippett got on the police radio in the car and said, "Hey, an officer's been shot. I'm so-and-so. I'm just a citizen, whatever. Officer, please get here." So sirens come screaming down Jefferson. Oswald, hearing these sirens, just takes a step into the, I want to say it was like the Payless shoe store, the Buster Brown shoe store. And an employee there named Johnny Brewer witnesses this guy.
Stop knowing that.
That steps in looking kind of sweaty and nervous. And just when the sirens come by, the guy steps in and faces not towards the sirens, which any normal person would look at these screaming sirens right. going by. He steps in and just kind of looking blankly inside the store, not coming in the store, just in the alcove through the windows. And then the sirens pass and the guy turns around and walks out.
So guilty.
So Johnny Brewer says that guy looks a little suspicious. And he walks out and looks at Oswald as Oswald's walking down the sidewalk. And he notices that Oswald ducks into the Texas Theater, which is just, I think, a couple doors down from this shoe store.
Hardy Shoe Store.
Hardy Shoe Store. There you go.
But it is Johnny
See, look,
Brewer.
He knows everything.
Stop knowing
no,
that.
No, no, I'm just, it's amazing. I'm just rattling this off the top of his head, and it matches up.
So Oswald goes into the theater past the woman in the little ticket counter out front. And this really is what does him in, because if he had just paid for a ticket,
Julia Postal,
then I think Johnny Brewer would have called off that search. Julia Post is her name.
Postal, I think, is her name, yeah.
She was a postal worker. And so since Oswald ducked in there, Johnny Brewer says to this postal woman, "Hey, a guy just went in there without paying. He looked suspicious. You know, you should call authorities." And so they called the cops, and the cops descend on the Texas Theater, thinking maybe this is the guy that shot that police officer. And they go in, and Oswald's sitting on the third row from the back, five seats in.
You knew that.
Somehow I was magically able to get that right earlier in the show without having refreshed my memory on it. And when they approached, there were only like 11 to 15 people in the theater at this time. It's the middle of the day. They're playing War is Hell and Cry of Battle.
Stop knowing that.
A double feature. And they close down the exits, and they turn on the house lights, shut down the movie, turn on the house lights, and they start walking through and interviewing each person. Interviewing, you know, they're just kind of questioning them. And they talk to a couple of people. There was an officer named McDonald, I think, who was the one who was approaching towards Oswald. And when he's walking up towards Oswald, Oswald gets up and moves three seats down. He moves to the second seat from the third row back from the aisle and sits down. And McDonald starts approaching him. He's going to talk to Oswald next. And Oswald jumps up and says, "Well, it's all over now," and reaches into his waistband and pulls out his pistol. And a scuffle ensues. Officers descend on him. One of them said that the gun did pull the trigger on it, but the officer was able to put his hand down on top of the gun, and the webbing of his, between his thumb and index finger, the officer's thumb and index finger, was between the hammer.
Wow.
And the hammer collapsed down onto the webbing between his thumb and index finger, which of course prevented it from firing.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Could have taken out somebody else.
Right. And Oswald he fought like a mad dog, they say, until he was brought out to the front, in which he goes peaceful and quiet when all the crowd is out there in front of the theater. And he's yelling, I protest this police brutality.
So tomorrow in the ODEC at this time, I have so many questions based off of Bud's article about the TCU honorary degree and how that could have changed the timeline.
Yeah, frogs.
Can we talk tomorrow at this time about whether or not Lee Harvey had a plan B, what it would have looked like had the motorcade come by at a different time and all of that?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it weird to think that the whole thing might be TCU's fault?
Well, now, I think that's very unfair.
Sure. All right, Gordo, thank you for the great history lesson. It's a big week for Gordo.
It's
you can,
huge.
You can hear it in his voice.
For America, yes.
Tomorrow is the anniversary, 56th anniversary of the assassination. All right, coming up next.
Happy Lee Harvey Day, Gordo.
I'm sorry, what?
I know this is the biggest day of the year for you.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Today is a day we remember a fallen president, sir.
Yes.
We do, yes.
Rick tweeted at me, does it make the JFK anniversary any more special since it's on a Friday, just like 11/22/63?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was a Friday when that occurred. And it does make it a little extra sad today.
Extra sad.
Extra sad. Another P1 tweets, happy birthday, Gordon Keith. Okay, this is not
your
my birthday.
Whoa, okay, happy birthday.
P1 Adam tweeted, Merry Christmas to you, Gordon Keith. No, this is not my Christmas. It's December 25th.
Somebody here at the car wash asked you what Lee Harvey brought you last night.
Like, I wrote my letter to Lee Harvey a couple of weeks ago and put it in the mailbox, and he said that I addressed it to the North Pole in lower heaven. There's so much confusion in that.
What did you ask for this year?
I didn't ask Lee Harvey for anything this year. And no, there was nothing under my Lee Harvey tree this morning.
He fired 3 shots, and one of them through the president's head.
He did. And one of them through the president's throat and into John Conley. The same bullet.
That magically went through and it came out in a pristine form.
It didn't magically do anything. It went in a straight line, just like those things are wont to do. And then another P1, Paul, he tweeted, I still shot of Walter Cronkite putting on those stupid black glasses that he had. And it says, the Gordon Keith High Holy Days started at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, .. some 38 minutes ago.
Okay, that's wrong.
The Gordon Keith High Holy Days. That is so wrong. And then maybe my favorite is from Kevin. He tweeted this out, and I'll see if I can show this to you here. He's tweeted out the picture, the very famous picture of LBJ taking the oath of office on
Air Force One
mm-hmm. there with Jackie standing by his side, and he's got his hand up, and Kevin says, I'll never understand why Jackie left LBJ hanging like that. No, she is not leaving him hanging for a high five. That's him raising his hand to take the oath of office.
Terrible.
Why would she be high-fiving him in those circumstances anyway?
Terrible.
Sir.
In her blood-stained coat, as we make jokes about that picture.
Yes, indeed, Giorgio.
Hey, Gordo, in all seriousness, happy November 22nd
to you. It's not happy. This is not a very happy day. This is the day
we probably should have a moment of silence is what we ought to do.
Very desperate and low man killed the President of the United States.
With a little help.
With a mail-order rifle. With whose help?
Just a little help.
No help. And you guys had some questions yesterday about one Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, we were talking about the couple of pieces that Bud Kennedy had written in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
No relation.
Right.
ironically.
And how, if TCU had honored Kennedy with an honorary degree, then that would have delayed the schedule of the motorcade and would have pushed it past Lee Harvey's lunch hour. And my question to you was, that day, if something like that had happened, where it messed up his schedule, did he have a plan B? Like, was he going to go to a different floor? Was there was he going to find another perch somewhere else along the motorcade? Did he have any kind of a backup plan?
I don't think he was that determined. I think that this was a 50-50 thing with him, in a way. So you can look at it from several different perspectives. He had the idea that he was going to do this. And Lee Oswald had always wanted notoriety, and he was very involved in politics. You know, he had defected. He was an American who defected to the Soviet Union after his stint in the Marines. He was obsessed with communism and felt like it was the government that gave people the fairest shake. And he was a self-taught guy, and I've heard a lot of people say that he was stupid, and I don't think he was stupid. I think he had a learning disability, but the guy taught himself Russian.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I couldn't teach myself another language. Mm-hmm. But he had already tried to assassinate a right-wing political leader, General Walker, on Turtle Creek Boulevard, real near our old studios, the Ticket's old studios, with that same rifle. He tried to do that in April of 63, same year. And so he had already shown that he wanted to take out a political leader in that become what he's known for.
So he couldn't hit a target that was perfectly still, and yet he hit a guy in a motorcade twice.
Correct. General Walker, his bullet did not go straight through the window towards Walker, who was sitting at his desk. It actually hits the window pane. It was actual real divided glass in that window, and you can see where the bullet nicks that frame, and it knocked it off course and barely missed Walker.
Oh.
And ended up in the wall back
behind
him.
That's what made him miss. Okay.
And they didn't even know, connect him with that until after the Kennedy assassination. And Marina had the note that Lee had left her in April of that year when he went to go try to assassinate General Walker, and said, you know, it said something along to the effect of, Marina, if you're reading this note, I'm most likely in police custody right now. This is what you need to do. Our mailbox is located here. This is where you need to go get our mail. I have money for you here. He left her instructions for what to do when he was arrested for the assassination of General Walker. Now, it turns out he came back to his place that night at 214 Neely. And they did not know who did that with General Walker, who tried to assassinate General Walker in April of 63. But afterwards, they were able to trace the bullet they had recovered from that, and using metallurgy and whatever they do, electron analysis of the bullet fragments, they matched it to Oswald's ammunition that he later used to kill Kennedy. So he had shown that he was willing to assassinate political leaders, and I think that it was a confluence of things that he felt like this was fate for him to do this, because that motorcade he saw was coming right by his building that he had gotten a job in through Ruth Payne via Buell Frazier's sister. And Buell Frazier was the guy who drove him out to the school book depository on Friday for work that day. Because he broke with tradition. Now, he was living away from his wife. He and Marina had a very difficult marriage. And he was living in an apartment in Oak Cliff. She was living out in Irving with another woman who was an American who studied Russian and could speak Russian. And Marina was living out there with Lee Oswald's two daughters, Rachel and June. And Rachel was only a month old. June was 2 years old.
He met Marina in Russia?
He met Marina in Russia and brought her back here when he came back to the United States after he realized the Soviet Union wasn't any great shakes. He thought that system was just as corrupt as America was. So he brings Marina back. They have a couple babies here. And Lee came out on a Thursday. Now, normally he would take Buell Frazier, who was worked with him at the school book depository, would take Lee out to Irving to see Marina on the weekends. And instead, Lee Oswald asked him, hey, can you take me out to see Marina on Thursday night? Because I want to get some curtain rods for my rooming house in Dallas. I got the new place, and I want to put up some curtains. So I need to get these curtain rods, and I want to see Marina.
So Buell Frazier takes him out on Thursday night. This is the night before the assassination. Lee Oswald plays with his daughters and Ruth Payne's kids out in the front yard and asks Marina three times, "You think we can get back together? Please move to Dallas to get an apartment with me. I think we can make this work. Will you please move back in with me?" And she didn't. She was mad at him.
She denied
him. They fought
him
a lot.
Because he was abusive.
He was abusive.
Was a total jerk.
She was pretty hot-tempered, too. And she was mad at him because she had called out to the rooming house earlier that week and found out he was living at 1026 North Beckley under an assumed name. And that made her mad because he was starting his squirreliness
crazy
again.
Spy
yeah,
stuff,
craziness. Yeah.
So she denied him three times.
Okay. Yes. and he had begged her to do this, to come back and reunite with him. She said no. She said that he goes to bed kind of mad, and she said part of her felt like he didn't sleep all night. He just laid there. And at 5 o'clock that next morning on Friday, the day of the assassination, he gets up and kisses the kids goodbye and says to Marina, you know, hey, listen, I left something for you and the girls. He asked her, have you bought those shoes? He'd asked her this the night before, have you bought those shoes for June? That was their oldest daughter. She goes, no. And he said, you really need to buy those. Promise me you're going to buy those for her. And Lee was very, very stingy. He did not spend money. And that morning, the next morning, Friday morning, night, day of this action, he said, hey, I left something on the dresser for you. There's some money there. You get June and Rachel whatever they want. And he left $170, which was a huge amount of money. That's everything he had. Every penny he had. She didn't know this, obviously, until later. She's still sleeping in the bed. So I left something on there. You guys, you get them whatever they want. And then she thought that he was coming back over to kiss. I think she thought he was coming back to kiss her, but instead that's what he had said. He said, use that money that I left on the dresser to buy whatever you want. And then he leaves. Okay? And then, of course, the assassination happens. Now, she doesn't find this until after the assassination, that he had left something else on the dresser in a little teacup that her grandmother had given her. He left his wedding ring there. So he symbolically leaves this wedding ring after his wife has said, no, we're not getting back together.
But and even had she seen it, she would have thought, okay, well, I guess we're just broken up. It didn't mean he's going to go shoot the president.
Right, she could have thought that. But at this point, when she found it, she already knew that he had
was
suspected in that. So I think that there was a chance that if Marina had reunited with him, that this would not have been the emotional event that pushed him over to it. Now, I think he was certainly thinking about it the whole time. But I think that he could have been swayed one way or the other.
And just a couple of days in advance, right? Not like a month-long plan of...
Right. No, he didn't know that the thing was going to come by the school book depository before then.
Until a few days before then.
Yeah. Right. And so I think he saw it as a big opportunity that was coming his way. But I think he's looking for something to also kind of talk him out of it, which could have been this reuniting of their family. But when she says no, he gives her all his money and his wedding ring. And, of course, you know what happens after that. Now, when they find out that the one employee that's missing from the school book depository is Lee Oswald, they eventually find out that his wife is living in Irving with Ruth Payne. They go out and interview her. They ask Ruth Payne if Lee Oswald has a rifle. And Ruth Payne, who owns the house that Marina's staying in, says, no, he doesn't have a rifle. I wouldn't allow him to have one here. And Marina says, actually, that's not true. And he goes, okay, well, where is it? And she goes, well, it's in the garage. And they go over to this blanket that Lee always kept his rifle rolled up in. And Marina said, it's in the blanket right there. That's where he hides his gun. And the officer goes over and picks up the blanket in the middle. He grabs it in the middle to pick up the rifle. And the blanket fell limp over each side of his arm. The rifle was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee had taken it. Now, when Buell Frazier had taken him to work that morning, Lee Oswald was carrying an unusual package. It wasn't his normal lunch. Breaking with something that he always did, he always carried his lunch to work because he was poor and cheap and he couldn't afford to buy lunch. Buell Frazier asked him, you know, hey, you don't have your lunch. He says, no, I think I'm going to buy it today. And he goes, well, what's in that package? And he goes, oh, well, it's the curtain rods I was telling you about. Now, in the rooming house that Oswald rented at 1026 North Beckley, there were curtains already up there. No need for curtain rods. Marina didn't even have extra curtain rods. But yeah, he said this package, which they traced that paper back to the school book depository, it was packing material that they had had, that it was from there, and his prints were found on that. And that was what the Warren Commission believed, that he took the gun, disassembled Carcano rifle, to the school book depository that morning in that package that he had told Buell Frazier was curtain rods. And meanwhile, afterwards, they searched the school book depository, searched his rooming house. Nowhere found were these curtain rods that he claimed were in that package.
All right, this is all fascinating. I want to pick it up at 9:15 in the corner because we're running late here. But it's a big day for Gordo. It's November 22nd.
No.
More on Lee Harvey. I also want to get into how young he was when he died. That blew me away. I always thought he was 38. He was 24. We'll do that at 9:15. Coming up next, though, let's talk snow monkeys with Nolan. And I'm having so much fun looking at all of these Gordo slouching pictures. I've retweeted a
few of them.
They are so funny. The Unticket looks like been doing all these this morning. So if you want to see these, you can go to Twitter. They're incredibly funny, putting Gordo in all these historical situations, all slouched down in his chair.
Yeah, I'm in the Situation Room during the bin Laden raid, sitting there slouched next to Hillary and Barack Obama. They have me at the hearings, the impeachment inquiry.
Have you seen the one with you at the Lee Harvey press conference?
No.
Yes. I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at me slouched.
All right, let's get into the corner brought to us by Baker Brothers Plumbing and Air and by Burleson Hunt.
Well, I figured we'd just focus on Cowboys Patriots.
No, not today.
Who you got?
Fantastic Friday fan feedback.
Not today.
888-787-1310.
This is your big day.
Sound off about the Cowboys. Or the Kennedy assassination, that is the telephone number.
Quickly, you do act like you know what's going to happen all the time in sports. What's going to happen Sunday? Cowboys, Patriots.
Patriots.
Okay.
We'll get beaten by the Cowboys. Or they may win.
Okay, I figured.
You never know in sports.
That's right.
All right, how many people in this room? And we have, how many people in here?
A
couple
lot.
Of dozen people
600.
In here. How many people believe there was a conspiracy to kill John F. Kennedy? Look at that. That's, what, about a third of the people?
Yeah,
pretty
good.
That's about
right.
Yeah.
That's about right. What do you guys, where do you guys stand these days? Has working with a noted non-conspiracy theorist swayed you over the years?
Yes, and I've told you this before. I settled on he was the lone gunman. Your guy was the lone gunman.
Not my guy you're talking about.
When on, I believe it was the 25th or the 30th anniversary, whenever, all of the reporters who covered the assassination here in Dallas all week long, and the Ruby Oswald, the whole thing, they were here. They all had
Ruby and Oswald weren't here, but
no,
the
but all those reporters were here, and they held a vote at the end of their week reunion. Did Oswald act alone? And it was anonymous vote. They all wrote it down on a piece of paper, put it in a hat. There were like 40 of them. And in fact, Bert Shipp, who was with us, told us this story. This is like 20 years ago, and he said it was unanimous, 40-0. All of these reporters who are skeptical by nature agreed Oswald acted alone.
Yeah.
And that's what made me settle on he must have acted alone.
Yeah, you, that best evidence has swayed me. And when the movie JFK came out.
Best evidence, though, is a conspiracy book.
I thought it was the other way around.
Best evidence is usually about the body. Isn't that one of.
Oh, what's maybe. What's the other
Mark
one?
Lane?
Case Closed?
Case Closed.
Okay, that's
one
I was thinking of. Yeah, sorry. Case Closed. But if you go back to the early 90s, I was convinced after I saw JFK.
Oh, yeah. You watch that movie and you're like, man.
I really did. I wasn't thinking, okay, I got to go and do something about this and really research it. But I did come back from that movie really creeped out thinking, wow, what if our government had something to do with that? But no, I don't think so. I certainly don't think the government had anything to do with it.
I still love that movie. I think it's a good movie.
It's a well-made movie, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy that movie.
Yeah.
And it does to you exactly what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Which is not answer a lot of stuff, but just raise a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where most conspiracy theorists live. They live in the, but there's just a lot of questions.
Yeah. And I read Best Evidence in college, and that helped confirm it, too. That's what really got me started.
Confirm there was a conspiracy.
Oh, yeah, man. There's no doubt.
Right.
But
right.
No.
Okay, so any other areas of the assassination you'd like to speak of, or things that you still have questions about that you still think don't quite add up?
The one thing that people bring up probably the most is, what were people seeing or hearing behind the fence line on the grassy knoll? That's the only kind of murky area to me, that maybe there was somebody up there. I don't think there was, but why did so many people run up the hill? Why did so many point to that area? And why in that one still frame can you kind of see a shadowy figure behind that fence?
All great points.
You're talking about the Borman photo, the Polaroid?
It's a stretch. You really have to, you know,
I tell you what's very helpful in the TV shows when they're showing you that photo is how they'll outline that supposed gunman's figure.
Here's what you're not seeing.
Because at first you're just looking at it and it looks like, oh, it's just splotches of light and everything. Yeah. I don't have no idea. But they're going, no, here's the guy. And they're oh, now I see it. Right. Yeah, people did. There were several people who felt that there were shots from the grassy knoll. And the footage that you see of some people running up to the knoll was taken sometime after the shooting also.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to, I mean, you don't know what exactly they're running up there for. It does seem a little bit strange that they're, hey, there's gunfire, let's run in the direction of it.
Yeah.
But yes, there were witnesses who said, and I don't have the figures exact, but it's something like 30% said that they heard shots from the grassy knoll. Now, a good percentage of those 30% also said they heard them from the sixth floor as well, the direction of the sixth floor. So they heard them from both locations. But like 70% of people said they heard them exclusively from the sixth floor area.
Right.
And the conspiracy-minded person says, what about the people who, all the witnesses that they heard from the grassy knoll? And they're somehow ignoring, they love witnesses, right?
Right.
Witnesses. I'm going to believe the people who are actually there. And then you ask them about the 70% that said the sixth floor, and they go, well, I mean, you know, eyewitness, I mean, that's unreliable and everything. It's grassy knoll. They want to count the witnesses that
that's
go grassy knoll, but not the other.
And I've learned over time, I used to really be fascinated with that, whatever, 10 or 20%. But like right now, if something happened in the parking lot, and let's say we heard a loud three bangs, where did it come from? We would have different accounts all across the board here.
Right.
Of where it came from. And
but would we use the fact that there are three different accounts to say, well, it didn't happen the way that the investigation later would say it did? Do we say the fact that they have differing accounts, does that disprove that there was actually one way in which it did happen?
Right.
No, we don't.
Right.
But in this case, we have this thing to where we chase the small exceptions. And that's what conspiracy theorists do. They'll spend most of their time ignoring 98% of the evidence to focus on 2% of the evidence.
Yeah.
And they never seem to square it in their head about, well, why am I so biased to disregard all of this stuff that seems to prove his guilt? Because I love chasing the things that seem to say that he was not involved or he had more people involved than just him.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of it should be looked at. I don't think you should dismiss the 30% of people who said they heard it from the grassy knoll. Is there some explanation for this that we have? Can we? Are there echoes inside Dealey Plaza that could make people think that they were? Because some people also testified they felt it was coming from all around them.
Turkey shoot.
They couldn't even tell where it was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were some people who heard 8, 12 shots. Does that mean that there definitely were 8 to 12 shots, if that's what somebody said? Or could those people be mistaken? You got to look at the aggregate of the evidence. You don't just sit there and single out one piece of evidence and say, well, this person said this, so therefore this is proof of a conspiracy. Or if one person said, I just saw this one guy do it, are we going to believe the one guy says, I saw Lee Harvey act alone? No, you have to take into account other people's positions as well, and other evidence. So when you have a gun that the man purchased under an assumed name, was shipped to his mailbox, was one that he had used in another crime, one that his wife testified was his gun, one that they found his prints on, and the bullets that he bought matches the ones that hit Kennedy and Conley and the general that
the
he tried to assassinate months earlier, and was shot from the sixth floor where Oswald self-admitted that he was at the time. So what do we have to do with all this evidence that points to his guilt? Conspiracy theorists, if there's so much evidence that points to his guilt, That proves how big the conspiracy is.
Because
it takes an incredibly powerful agency to have all this guilt point to one man.
Yeah. And the other one that's always thrown in that kind of freaked me out a little bit was the pristine bullet, when actually it wasn't totally pristine.
No, it's deformed. It's flattened out. And somewhat, it's a full metal jacket bullet. That's another thing, is that you compare a full metal jacket bullet to a bullet that's designed to deform on impact, which full metal jacket is not. It's designed to remain intact as possible.
Yeah.
As opposed to one that's supposed to mushroom or completely get deformed when it hits something. You know, but people don't get that far into the weeds on it.
No.
All they go is that, hey, look at this bullet. And then look at this other bullet that was fired from a hollow point 357. Look, compare those two. They go, oh, well, one's really different. They say this one did all this damage. This one over here, all it did was hit a fence. Well, you're talking about two very different kinds of bullets in very different situations.
And the power of suggestion in JFK, it's just a short little clip, 5-second clip of a government agent dropping a bullet on the gurney as he walks by.
Yeah,
wow, that's how they did it. Okay.
Yeah, and with no evidence for that happening.
No,
But they show that in the movie.
Yeah.
And then that we take away that and we believe it. And I get the allure of the conspiracy thing. It is so much more fun to do the conspiracy. And all you have to do, it's great being a conspiracy theorist, because when someone is sitting there presenting evidence of Oswald's guilt, all you have to do is not listen to what their answer. You ask a question. All you say is, you know, what about someone saying that they found another rifle there? And then you answer that and say, okay, actually, there was no other rifle there, and here's the documentation. Here, we'll go through these 30 pages of the evidence of the depository and everything. And they just kind of get glassy-eyed and everything as you're talking about that. And then they're just waiting for you to stop talking. They can say, what about the person that they heard in Miami who said that they also wanted to kill the president?
Like, all right, let me go chase that one down.
And then you go chase that down, and you find out, and you say, yeah, okay, yeah, somebody else talked about killing the president in Miami because he was the president, and a lot of people had something against him. But how does that imply that they were working with Oswald?
Yeah.
And then they look glassy-eyed and everything. And then they do that. And then, oh, you're going to tell me it's just a coincidence that they drove right in front of the building that he shot him from?
Right.
No, I'm not going to say that's a coincidence. That's why he shot him from that building, is because he worked there. That's the exact reason he did it. He was on a suicide mission to commit this assassination.
Will you, at 1 p.m. today, be set up in the bathtub across from the school book depository to celebrate?
Riding down Elm Street in the bathtub.
You mean at 12:29?
Oh, sorry.
No, I don't know
what you're talking about. Stop knowing the exact time.
All right, let's take at least one.